We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and last week we started discussing arguments and fights, and we discussed don'ts. We discussed not to walk out on the argument. We discussed that some have this approach that you should resolve it that night, and I have a hard time understanding how to practically implement that, because very often one of the main issues of the fight is the fact that both sides are overtired. We discussed the benefits of sometimes taking the argument outside, if that will help both sides keep things constrained, a little bit more civil. We discussed that if it won't help them remain civil, then they shouldn't take it outside. It's no one's business to see them yelling at one another. Now, as far as some do's, what are tools to help us help resolve a fight? So we have to know a few classical things in an argument. One classical thing is the classical need of a man and the classical need of a woman within an argument. Once an argument starts developing, so as much as the woman is arguing and she may not give in, she needs to feel secure in the connection. So she might need a hug. She might want to spend time together. What the guy needs is the exact opposite. Give me my space. So he wants to go into a room and sit and do what he's doing, and she wants to sit together. And a classical conversation can go as follows. She'll say, "Why don't we sit together?" And he'll say, "Don't you think like maybe we've like been on one another's case long enough?" And he'll start walking to the other room. And she'll say, "Isn't it enough? All the horrible things you said to me, now you're going to walk out on me too?" And he looks at it as, "I'm not walking out on you. I'm just taking some private time." And she's looking at it as, "Why don't you want to be together?" Whereas he looks at that and says, "Being together, who are you kidding? Nothing good will come of it. Let's calm down for a few minutes." We have to understand it stems from differing needs, meaning her need and his need. She wants to feel secure in the relationship in spite of the argument. He wants his private space. And I think part of what has to be gauged is, who's in the right? Meaning, sometimes she's dead wrong, sometimes he's dead wrong. Sometimes even though you're having an argument, you know you're wrong. And even if you're in the right, if you can only do it, then it's nicer to do things her way. Meaning, in general, in a relationship, part of what makes a relationship work is that we don't stand our ground, we don't say, I'm right, I'm not giving in. On the contrary, we try to find room to come towards the other person. As a person is willing to be forgiving, that's what builds a great relationship. When a person starts thinking, "I'm not giving in, this is my right," and that's when you start having serious conflict in a marriage. So long as we can maintain the attitude, let me see how I can make this work, let me see how I can give in and smooth things over, things will go more smoothly. We have this tendency, especially us men, to think, there's a word in Hebrew, I don't know if it's equivalent in English. I don't want to be a friar. How do you say that in English?
Sucker.
Okay.
Like big time.
There's got to be a better word for that.
A bigger thing that people don't want to be.
Naive.
Okay. So why should I be the one to give in? You can't really build that way, because every day has many issues. You'll never run through a day where there won't be at least 30, 40 issues that come up. And if you're going to stand your ground, so then you're going to have 30, 40 explosions a day. You can't, the house becomes a nightmare. If you're willing to forgo a lot of things, so then things can work. And very often we don't even understand where the other party is coming from. It doesn't matter. There are two attitudes, there are two approaches you can have. One is an attitude of fairness. Is this right? Do I deserve this? Does she deserve this? And that attitude will breed many conflicts. And then there's an attitude that says, I love this person, and what can I do for them, and how can I make this work? And it doesn't come naturally. You think that you love a person, so it comes naturally to have that attitude. It doesn't work that way. You have to keep reminding yourself that that's how all marriages work. People like to think that, by my neighbor, he's not giving in like this. No one else is having it as rough as I am. It doesn't work that way. Every marriage involves a lot of compromise. And people think compromise means I give a little and she gives a little. No, compromise means you give a lot. You think, what about her? We don't begin to understand how much women are giving every day. We don't understand their psyche, so we don't understand how much they're really giving in. Most of the time, a woman is giving 10 times as much as a man, and he doesn't even appreciate it. He doesn't begin to understand how much she's doing for him. That's the nature of how the relationship plays itself out.
Can you give an example?
I can give many examples, but it won't help. You still won't appreciate it. I'll give one example. You'll think, in my house, that's not what happens. Remember the story of the wife who asked her husband what he wants for supper?
Yeah.
Let's take a small example. A wife asked her husband, what do you want for supper? Now, if you were the one making supper, you knew what worked for you. You knew what leftovers you had in the fridge. What would you do? You'd call up your wife and say, hi, I was planning on making chicken. Does that work for you? That's the best you would do, right? Worst you would do is you'd make chicken and you wouldn't even ask her because, hey, that's what was ready in the fridge. Why should I waste that? That's leftovers from Shabbos. I was supposed to make something fresh tonight, tomorrow night. You know, we got to finish the leftovers. But your wife doesn't do that. She calls you up and asks, what do you want for supper? And she figures, well, if he prefers something else, so we'll figure out what to do with the leftovers. Maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. Small thing, right? But it can cost her 3 hours of her day. Like, it's a small thing, but a guy doesn't even think about it. When his wife asks him, what do you want for supper? He doesn't even think like she did anything for him. He'll come in, he'll show up for supper and say, I don't have an appetite anymore. My heartburn's acting up. She just killed herself for 3 hours, and he looks at the food and says, leave it for tomorrow. And she looks, and she stares at it, and she's got to swallow that, right? And if she gets upset, he doesn't even understand. But I asked you what you want. And he says, right, then I wanted it, and now I lost my appetite. And she feels like, I just sacrificed 3 hours for what? And she swallows it, and very often she won't even tell you what she swallowed. Like, it's just par for the course. Small example, saying these are things that happen on a daily basis. Little things we don't even think about. But as they go, we don't, as men, we don't appreciate what was just done on our behalf. And these happen all the time. They happen with the kids, they happen with...
Doesn't that seem like a little bit of like self-persecution? Like, you were talking about before, like, psyche of a man is, like, you're an adult, you don't make dinner, like, make dinner. And at some point she would understand that, presumably, or she would figure out from the situation of him not understanding why it's such a big deal for her to ask him what's for dinner, that she would just figure, okay, I'll make chicken. That's what he wanted. He wanted me to just think of a dinner and make it.
Told you he wouldn't understand.
Right, you're thinking like a guy.
Right, you're thinking like a guy. I'm trying to explain to you, but you're not. You're set in your way of thinking. If you think like a woman and you think, this is one of the tools I have to show my love. And it's something that's intrinsic, that she wants to show her love this way. As a guy, you think like, chicken love, come on, there are other ways. No, to her, this is a big deal. And we don't work on the same wavelength. We have to learn to work on the same wavelength. And when she makes you supper and you say how delicious it was, you're starting to show an appreciation for what she's trying to convey. I gave an example. I'm not saying this is what will be in your house. I gave one example where a woman can invest 3 hours and the guy walks in and he doesn't even begin to appreciate what she did for him. But if he went 2 minutes out of his way or 60 seconds out of his way to take out the garbage, and something wasn't exactly right about, she came by and there wasn't a bag in the garbage and she dropped her apple in, and then he came back and there's an apple. He has no problem telling her, why couldn't you wait till I brought back, put in a bag before you put the apple in? And he feels like that's a very legitimate, request. What's the big deal, right? For 1 second, how long does it take to take out that core? It takes 1 second. She put in 3 hours. He has to do 1 second. But over that 1 second, he's capable of making a big deal. And he'll think he's right. So here's a small example, right? Okay, but there are many like that. Us men, we see things our way. They see things their way. But I'm just saying, in the course of an average day, the average wife has done many, many things on behalf of her husband, and the husband doesn't begin to appreciate them. So we have to train ourselves to work with the attitude of, let me see where I can give in, let me see where I can take steps forward towards my spouse, because there's so many things my spouse is doing for me which I don't even appreciate. I don't even know to appreciate. Very often we make arguments into matters of principle. We have to wonder if they are really matters of principle or we as men like to make things matters of principle. Your in-laws invite you for a Hanukkah party, and you say, we have to light Hanukkah candles on time. So they made it at an hour where it's impossible to light Hanukkah candles on time. None of your siblings care about that. I'm not going. I'll go, but on our time. And she says, but we'll show up late. Everyone else is going to be there. We're celebrating my grandfather's 85th birthday. And you say, what do you want from me? They made it at a bad time, right? You got your principles. So it's not fair. Very often you have to stop and look at the broader picture. And if you get an external opinion, not another guy who looks just like you, but, you know, someone who can really give an external opinion, very often you'll see things differently. Very often, men like to take the argument into their territory, that it's a question of principles, and very often it isn't. But we like to see it that way. Yeah?
Okay, along those lines, actually, kind of on a principle, but kind of on a halakha. Let's say the situation is you got to go to the in-laws' house, and in-laws don't keep kosher. What do you do at that point? I mean, you don't want to rock the boat, but...
I think you have to consult. I think that's where one idea that can very often diffuse many situations is if the couple makes up that they have a local Orthodox rabbi that they go by. So such a question should be posed in a general sense. How do we work this out? It goes both ways. And what happens when the parents visit your house? Forget you visiting them for a minute. What happens when they come to you?
Well, they eat anything anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Right, but if they're going to stay by you, your wife gives birth, they're going to stay by you for 2 weeks to help out, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to discern between meat and milk, what are you going to do? You know, they're not used to keeping meat and milk separate.
Delicately show them.
No, so if you'd consult, hopefully you'd find someone who could give you good advice. I tell couples in such circumstances to keep the house either dairy or meat. Get rid of all the other dishes. Figure out which one's going to be easier for the parents and you, which ones you can eat more of. And then put away all the other dishes and make up with them that they only buy X, Y, and Z. So you could say the house is only dairy. You put away all the meat dishes, and then you don't have to worry about them bringing home meat from the shuk, and you're not sure what kashrut it is and other stuff. So if that's an issue, so I say, okay, put away all the meat and parv dishes. Leave out only milchik. And then you know everything out is milchik. And you tell them, look, we're going to keep things simple. We're vegetarian and dairy, okay? And that's an easy way in which it's a small sacrifice. You can go out twice during those 2 weeks and have a fleshik meal, and you could figure out a way around it. But that's what I'm saying. If you consult with an external party, very often you can find solutions that you might not have thought of to come and tell people, this is dairy and this is meat. They'll get it right much of the time, except for when they don't. You know, and when they're in the middle of eating their hot dogs with cream, and suddenly they forget they're in your house, and they go to get a scoop of sour cream to put on their hot dog, and now your spoon with the sauce from the hot dog went into the sour cream. Now what are you going to do? And that's assuming you were there to see it. What happens if you're out of work all day? So that's why certain solutions are more practical. But again, you speak to people with experience. So very often you can find solutions that others have discovered that make things easier. So how do you work out an argument? So men have a very good system at working out arguments. It's called, let's get to the point now. Okay, we have an argument, this is the way I see it, this is the way you see it. I was wrong on A, B, and C, how do you view it? And it doesn't work with women, and men get very frustrated that women won't work things out this way. Okay, I guess we'll illustrate it with a story. The importance of the story is because you're going to live through the story many times in your life. So at least you'll have heard it before and you'll understand what's going on. So what should we call our couple? Give them a name.
Avram and Sarah.
What?
Avram and Sarah.
Avram and Sarah, fine. Avram and Sarah have a fight. And the next morning, Avram calls Sarah from work. He says, look, I know that we're both upset. Why don't we meet outside? We'll go for a walk. We'll discuss it. We'll try to work things out. Sarah says, great idea. Okay, Avram shows up. He calls Sarah. They meet outside. They start going for a walk. There's silence. After about 3 minutes, he says, we're here for a reason. Why don't you present your side of things? Silence. They walk another minute or two. He says, Sarah, we said we want to work things out, right? So why don't you tell me the way you see it, and I'll understand better. Silence. So he's getting really frustrated. Avram looks at Sarah and he says, look, I explain something to me. Didn't we say we're going to go for a walk and understand things? So she nods her head and he sees she's really upset. And he says, what are you upset about? I didn't say anything wrong yet. All I did was I asked, can you explain to me how you view the situation? And then I can explain my side. I'm even saying you should present it first, because I don't want to sound like I'm attacking, like I'm making arguments against you. I want to really understand how you view it. Silence. So he says, didn't we say we're going to discuss this? She says, talk. So he says, oh, you want me to talk first? She says, fine. He says, okay. The way I view it is, and he presents his version of the whole story, and they keep walking, and they're silent, and he finishes, and he says, and how do you see it? And she says, I think you're 100% right. I'm 100% wrong. I'm very sorry. And he's getting really frustrated now. He says, look, this isn't fair. She said, you're right. I'm a bad person. I'm also not fair. And he says, I didn't say that. She says, okay, I'm sorry. I'm a bad person. I said something you didn't say. And he says, but wait, I'm trying to understand. Why can't you just explain to me how you view it? Silence. They keep walking. He says, in order for a marriage to work, two people have to talk. We have to understand one another. He explains all these wonderful things to her. She says, you're right. I'm a bad person. You lost. He says, I didn't say that, but I do want to understand you. Silence. He says, can you tell me how you see it? She says, you did a very good job. You're right. I'm wrong. Finished. He says, no, that's not what I meant to say. I'm sure there are things I was wrong on. You want me to come and start figuring out how you view it, what I did wrong? Silence. He says, I don't get it. We agreed we're going to meet here. We agreed we're going to talk. We agreed we're going to walk. How come you're not saying anything? She says, I said, and you said, and what's left to say? He says, what do you mean what's left to say? I want to hear your side of it. He's not getting anywhere. He's frustrated, and this is the best case scenario where he can still maintain his cool trying to have this conversation. They walk up in a steamy silence. And the night continues, and a few weeks pass, and the way things go, things boil over, and life continues. And then a few weeks later, they make up to meet outside, and they go for a walk. They meet, and he asks her, how was your day? And she tells him, and she asks him, how was his day? And he tells her, and they start small talk, and they chat for about 25 minutes about nothing. And then after 25 minutes, he says, about 3-4 weeks ago, we were walking down the same path, and I was trying to understand how you saw things, and I wish you could tell me a little bit more about it. And she does. And then he says, okay, so what happened this time different than last time? Now, I'm going to give you a fictitious situation where the wife actually explains what the difference is. In real life, it doesn't exactly work this way. But in a fictitious life, she tells him, we showed up to the date. If you wanted to discuss what went wrong, then you should have began by asking me how my day was. And then talking to me about how life is and having 25 minutes to half hour of small talk. In other words, remember, a woman wants to connect. You want to talk to me about what was wrong? So first talk to me about what's right. First show me you love me. First let's walk and talk about nothing. First let's reconnect. From there we can work into what was wrong. But if we simple-minded men come to the conversation and we're very straight, this is the issue, this is the way I see it, how do you see it? You're not going to get anywhere. Suddenly she closes up and you're all frustrated because you use the classical male method. Why isn't she dancing according to your fiddle. You don't view it that way. In the man's mind, this is the normal way of doing things. So no, this is the male way of doing things. If women had an argument, so then women would spend 2 hours on small talk before they would dare broach the subject. They might spend 2 conversations on small talk, rebuilding the relationship, before they would dare address the situation. So you're marrying a woman, which means if you want to discuss it, you have to some degree, you have to go by her rules. Yes?
Isn't this like in the beginning of the relationship? I mean, after you're like 10, 20 years being with each other, you kind of know each other well enough to know that this is kind of...
I think you're right. It's only for the first century of marriage. Afterwards, you can work it differently.
He does have a point, though. Like, you do pick up small nuances in the way people work after hanging around with her.
Right. I expect the more you're married, the more you'll understand her and be able to work her way.
And the
agreed.
More she'll understand you.
Yeah. You see, you're expecting that after 10 years, she'll become more male. Why don't you work the other way? After 10 years, you become more like her.
No,
okay, but either way, you would understand.
And when I said 20 minutes, I put you in the middle. I didn't say 2 conversations. I didn't say 2 hours. I already jumped to the middle. More than that is unfair. It's asking her to be a guy. No, I jumped to the middle off the bat. I didn't ask you to be a woman. I immediately, you see, this is one of the challenges I have. There's a book, Rav Arush wrote a book. And I always say, I try to tell the truth and he tries to educate. And maybe I should learn from him. Because he goes to the extreme. You figure he goes to the extreme, so then people will get to the middle. I start straight at the middle where I think it's right. But, you know, maybe I should work his way. You have 2 conversations. You talk to her 2 hours. Then you compromise to 20 minutes. I start with the compromise, but maybe that's not right. You know, I feel like he takes it to the extreme, but I think his point is to get to the middle. Yeah.
So you don't understand her more after 10 years of marriage.
Why don't you understand her more? I hope you will. Understanding her more doesn't mean forcing her to work your way.
Okay, no.
Understand her, and it should come naturally to work her way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just from my observation, I could be wrong, but I think there's a big difference between American/Ashkenaz and Sephardic and Israeli women as far as how they act, as far as the marriage goes. You know, I think the man, the Sephardic marriage, he's the boss and he runs the show, and the woman just gotta get used to it. And
you're 100% right.
The kind of household she grew up in.
There are many cultures where if you walk on the floor after she washed it, there are many cultures where if you walk on the floor after she washed it, she's capable of yelling at you for 30 minutes straight. If we're talking about Israeli Sephardic cultures, so then there are certain things that are very central in their lives, like washing the floor. And you can get a speech that runs the line, Hebrew or English, how should I say it? I'll give you a speech. Do you want it in Hebrew or English?
English.
English. English. Don't I respect you? Why do you make me feel like life is not worth living? How come you do this to me? I don't understand. Don't I do everything to respect you? You wake up in the morning, I wash the floors. You finish breakfast, I wash again. We get ready to leave for work, I wash a third time. We come home from the job, I wash again. We sit down for supper, I wash again. Can't you have the decency not to walk on the floor I washed? You make me feel like life's not worth living. I've never seen a guy treat a wife like this. You want Sephardi? Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. You want 30 minutes of Sephardi? And I didn't say it at the top of my lungs. People have this imagined Sephardi relationship. Go talk to a Moroccan friend about what a wife can say.
I'm looking at my own family. You're right. That does happen.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, it's like usually the guy is like the boss. You know what I mean?
I'm saying you're being the boss, but she's capable of yelling at the top of her lungs for 30 minutes and lines that are so sharp that an Ashkenazi doesn't know where to find himself. And Ashkenazi's like, what did I do? What did I do? I don't know. Life's not worth living. What did I do? I stepped on your freshly washed floor. You know, as Ashkenazim, we don't understand such terminology. I guess you've seen it in the family, so you know what I'm talking about. But there's no limit that I've seen to the harshness, to the degree of passion that a Sephardi woman will put into her yelling. So you're talking about the Sephardi man being the man of the house. I'm not exactly sure it's the way you're describing it, you know.
Bedouin culture, I've seen when you think they're like, yes, doesn't always look, things aren't always what you think.
And again, each culture has their codes of accepted behavior. I think that there's one more point that has to be a constant, even through an argument. And that is, we have two concepts. We have Avat Olam and Ava Rabba. There's an eternal love, and there's love that keeps fluctuating, going up and down. One of the messages that a husband should always convey is that there's always Avat Olam. As we've discussed in the past, the word divorce doesn't belong in an argument. There has to be a constant thread of a consistency where you both know you can count on one another, and that's not up for discussion. You don't take your bed out of the bedroom. You don't go sleeping in another room. You don't. There are certain don'ts in life. You don't go calling your parents sleeping by them. She doesn't belong by her parents. We're just too short on time. Let's finish a few points if we have time. It doesn't hurt to leave a nice little note telling her you love her. She might leave it there as though she didn't see it, but she'll see it. It doesn't hurt to put a little candy in her wallet with a note, to send her a nice text message and SMS. Small things do carry a big weight. And especially when things are rough between a couple, it's important to try and do those small things too. They won't resolve the whole picture, but they help. Finally, if the couple is mutar, if they're at the part of the month where they're permitted to touch, it's a good idea to have physical contact when you're talking, to hold hands and to sit close together as you speak about what went wrong. Tov, yes, Benny.
I had a question last week about, you know, like moving beds. What happens if she says, like, oh, you can't sleep in the bed tonight?
I don't think that should be acceptable. There are certain things that you shouldn't be allowed to tell her, and she shouldn't be allowed to tell you.
Right.
What does that mean, you can't sleep in the bed tonight?
If one of those scenarios pop up, what is the do?
I think that then the couple should have a discussion. You know, there are certain things that I don't think it's one another's rights to tell one another. What does that mean? I'm not allowed to sleep in the bed tonight. What does that mean? Why do you think it's legitimate for you to tell me or me to tell you? No, that should it should be understood that that's not within the realm of
that's
what's fair for one
right.
another. What?
So from everything you've told me, that seems like a man's logic. Like, this is the way it is. Like, this is what, like, there's a rule book, and, you know, clearly here it says that that's not allowed.
So I think this is something which people can discuss. And if for whatever reason one of the spouses comes from a perspective that because the two are arguing, one can tell the other, you're not sleeping in bed with me tonight, I think that should be discussed. As if you can't get it through in the time of the argument, then after the argument. And if you can't get it through discussion, so go to a counselor. But I don't think that should be. I don't think that's a point you should give in on. Okay.